In life and recovery, every day is a little different. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.
All right, it's the Hoffman Show, hour number two. We're live at Capital One Arena on the Team 980, always live as well on the free Odyssey app and streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980. And although he's sitting right here, and if you're watching on the YouTube stream, you can see Kareem Copeland. It's still 5 o'clock. It's still not my beat, and we refuse to not give this man a proper introduction. Anthony?
Today's top story, from the perspective of someone who's there.
You are looking live.
This just in.
Not my beat.
That's right. We're here from someone who's there. We're both here, Kareem, but it's your beat.
But I'm here a lot.
You are here a lot. /at ESA/ wherever the Mystics are. Tonight, Mystics Fever, final game of the WNBA regular season. Washington wins and gets help. They are in. They're going to need a lot of help and to come from some unlikely places. Obviously, on the Fever side of it, Caitlin Clark looking to finalize all of the records that she's broken. Someone should do a record counter. How many has she broken?
I can't keep up. I have to look up every time. I have to Google is my friend because every time it's always something almost every single night. So
yeah, I mean, she's just extending all her other. I mean, she's got the assist record. W assist record? For everybody,
yeah.
Or just for rookies?
W assist record, rookie points record. I know she's got some kind of threes record. I'm not sure which one it is. Like I said, I got to have a printout.
She's definitely got like any rookie record that
exists.
That exists. it's nuts how many she's got. All the rookie assist records, she might wind up. I mean, if she doesn't get the W assist record this year, she'll get it. Maybe as soon as next year. She's got to cut her turnovers and produce at the rate she was in the second half of the season. She probably gets that. Double-doubles, you know, in terms of points assists, it's been wild. But we'll circle back to her and some of the other league news in a second. For the Mystics, realistically, this is incredibly unlikely. they started the season, 0-12? And now they're on the verge of the playoffs. But, Kareem, my question would be, like, because they have their pick and Atlanta's pick, and whichever one doesn't make the playoffs will be the fourth lottery odds, unless all the weirdest stuff happens and Chicago winds up making it and both Atlanta and Washington mix, is there any outcome tonight that is better for Washington? Like, how much is that playoff experience worth versus not having it and having it be their pick in the lottery?
At this point, I mean, it doesn't really matter too much because either way, say, all of the chips fall in line and the Mystics make it, that just means Atlanta's the number four and they get that get that percentage for the draft for the lottery. Or if they don't make it, they're going to be and get that those same chances. So it really doesn't matter either way. So, silver lining. You'll get some of these young players that are going to be here. You know, maybe Aaliyah Edwards is ready to go by then. You know, she started running around a little bit yesterday on that ankle, but she's still out tonight. You look down the line, you know, this is what I think the second youngest team in the league. So getting them a little playoff experience and just that feeling, you can't substitute for experience, right? So that comes in helpful. But either way, you're only going to have the one outside of a miracle happening, you're only going to have the one lottery pick, and it's going to be the fourth best odds anyway. So you're kind of sitting in the same spot.
So with those lottery odds, it's going to be the fourth best odds the way the lottery is currently constructed. But we heard yesterday, new announcement, Portland's coming in a couple of years. That's actually 2026. But we know that Golden State is coming, the Valkyrie, next year. So there will be expansion. What do we know at this point about both the expansion draft and how Golden State's inclusion in 2025 will affect the regular draft? Since if you're a Mystics fan, like, you've had your eyes on this and the Paige Becker sweepstakes, and there's a couple other really good players in this draft as well. Like, could Golden State mess all that up?
Well, what I've heard so far, they've yet to make an official announcement of how all that stuff will go. But talk around the league and talking to GMs, it sounds like each team is going to be able to hold six in the expansion draft. And then the thought is that they will slot in right after the lottery. So okay. They would have the number 5 pick. And so it's kind of an interesting situation. Not just this year, I think for the following draft is going to be really crazy because, you know, everybody's trying to figure out who they're going to protect in expansion draft, right? Well, going during the 2026 offseason, going into that season, nobody signed. There's only two players, anyone who's not on a rookie contract, there's only two players in the league that are signed beyond 2025.
So just because the way the CBA has been and the contracts have been shortened?
Everybody's expecting the players to opt out of the CBA after this season because they just signed the new media deal. And so what you want is a new CBA so all this new $2.2 billion
so
can get
infused. So players knew that. They timed their contracts.
Everybody timed their contracts.
Like, I would like to be a free agent when there's an influx of money.
Boom. Exactly. That's
good agenting. That's good mathing. That's good playering.
Everyone. Even throughout this year, people have been signing extensions for 1 year. Mm. Nobody signed a long-term extension because everybody wants a piece of the new pie. However, the new talk is what's going to happen expansion draft-wise because if everybody is a free agent, you're not really protecting those people. So right. What kind of they're going to have to come up with some kind of stipulation or some kind of rule to address that. But also on the flip side, which is probably a bonus for those teams, there's going to be every name in the league is going to be available in free agency. And if you're Portland or Toronto, you can and you can sell.
You hey, you're going to come unlimited cap space,
unlimited cap space. And come on here. And you are instantly the face of our franchise of this brand new franchise.
And you could probably bring a friend.
And you could probably bring a friend.
We've seen that in the NBA of
absolutely.
Like, hey, let's unload everything. Let's wait for this particular summer and bring you and your best friend. And you got the buddy system, and that's how you get both championships in Miami and dumpster fires in Brooklyn. So sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't.
Absolutely. And so everybody's trying to figure out. That's why 2026 is – I keep talking about it. I keep banging it over and over and over because that's going to be a year in this league unlike any other and maybe unlike any other amongst the four major sports in this country. I don't know if there's ever been a time where you've had 80% of the league all as free agents, including every single veteran, including every single MVP, including every single all-star that's not on a rookie contract. That's crazy. That's why everybody's gearing up. That's why the Mystics are in the spot where they are, because their goal is to get young players, get picks, and have all kinds of flexibility going into the 2026 offseason, going into 2026, and be able to make a major push of somebody. You know,
right.
Everybody's going to be available. It's hard to say which one,
right.
But they'll have their pick to be able to make a push for.
Kareem Copeland, Washington Post, with us here on the Hoffman Show, live at Capital One Arena, talking hoops, talking WNBA as the Mystics finish their season tonight. You can hear the game against the Fever here on the Team 980. Wow, that is wild. Do you think that there's anybody that will buck the trend? Will there be a player that's like, I'm good? Like, I don't know. Asia Wilson's got a huge Nike deal, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is she like, I'm happy in Vegas. I can lock myself in now, and I can be an anchor that maybe can recruit other players. Is $100,000 extra a year in W money worth it to me versus the stability of signing a 4-year deal, max deal under the current contract, knowing that my star is going to continue to shine? I'm going to make so much more than that from Nike and other endorsements. And that's kind of the weird, you know, thing with this league too. And this comes into like the NIL discussions and whatever is these players, the stars in this league and in this sport are making so much more off the floor. That the on-the-floor money at that level, at the Asia Wilson level, at the Caitlin Clark level, are, and especially for Caitlin right now, a rookie deal, but even her next deal, it's real money. We'd take it.
Yep.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars. we'd take it. But it percentage-wise, compared to their off-court earnings, it's not nearly as big compared to where, like, yeah, LeBron's making crazy money from Nike, but he's also making $60 million a year from the Lakers. How does that impact this discussion, or is the money that's coming in the new TV deal significant enough that the whole dynamic of the sport changes in that way?
I think it's going to be a significant financial increase for everything, cap, salaries, all of that stuff. But I actually look at it from maybe the opposite direction. If you're a star, even if you've got, you know, all your Nike money and all of that kind of stuff, you still want a piece of this bigger pie. And you're a star, so you can go wherever you want. Asia Wilson can go wherever she wants. If she wants to stay in Vegas, Vegas is going to open their arms in 2026. If you're Breanna Stewart, the Liberty are still going to open their arms in 2026. I think about maybe the players a tier below. Now, maybe this is your opportunity to stick with a squad for 4 years if that's where you want to be and not have to deal or worry about the chaos of 2026. But that's also, if you're a tier below, you probably don't have all of the Asia outside money. So you probably want that new money is probably going to be significant for you.
Well, as we've seen in the NBA, like, every franchise wants a max player. There aren't enough players in the league that deserve max contracts based off merit. Like, not to say that I'm not here hating on anybody's money, but like, when I will hate on in the building that
I'm like, who's gonna be your example?
Sorry, Brad. Bradley Beal does not deserve the same contract as LeBron James. Like, that is the most obvious statement in the world. Yet, this team here gave him all that money because he was their best player. And that's how that league has gone about it. And I think that's something interesting to watch is, like, who's the Brad Beal, if you will. There's plenty of other stars. I mean, you can make an argument that a guy like Damian Lillard, right? Mm-hmm. Damian Lillard's an incredible basketball player, a championship caliber player. But building around him in Portland the way they tried to, like, it was only so fruitful. So there's plenty of great players that are not Asia Wilson, Stewie. Like, mm-hmm. the bar to be the best player on a championship team is so high. And so when all of a sudden the whole league is available, like,
I mean,
that's
look at the Aces.
Pretty
the Aces have four starters who could earn that type of money, who could earn max salaries. Like, Kelsey Plum, Jackie Young. They could, if Toronto tries and says, hey, we want you to be the cornerstone of our franchise for one of those two, that's a decision to make. Those are all stars. Those are Olympians that, hey, especially you've got a couple rings already. You know, you've had a good run with Vegas, but maybe you want an opportunity to do your own thing, to have a team
built around you. And we play in the summer. So in Toronto, it's not even cold.
Oh, my gosh. I just told somebody that today. I covered probably, 2 years ago, I covered Wizards at Toronto in December or January.
No amount of money that they could have paid you, but
was not fun.
It's gonna be a higher number than what it takes to go to Toronto, a phenomenal summer city.
Great city, not when it's snowing and about 2 degrees outside.
Yeah. So where does that then leave the Mystics in all of this? Because they are the youngest team in the league. They have a number of picks the next couple of years. They made a trade at the deadline for Maisha Hadallen to acquire yet another pick. They've got two this year, so they'll have some rookie players under contract going into 2026 still on their rookie deals. Where does that leave them in this wild goose chase of an equation?
The way I kind of look at it is, I think Shakir Austin and Ariel Atkins, I don't think either of those two are going anywhere.
Do you think that when 2026 rolls around, Mike Tebow, presuming that he's still in charge, will be like, max contract, signature here, please?
I'm not sure what the money exactly will be, just because I don't know what the new financial structures will be, but I think they'll go out of their way to keep those two for sure. Then you've got your rookies, like you'll have Aliyah Edwards, you'll have whoever the two rookies within the top, I guess it'll be top six, assuming that Golden State will slot in at number five. So you'll have two top six players this year in what's expected to be a pretty good draft. Next year is supposed to be a pretty good draft also, so you'll have one there, depending where they have. So you'll have a young core, and then I think that's when you go after one or two veterans and say, hey, we can be contenders. Look at this young core that we have. That's attractive, and now we plug you in, an all-star or two, you know, depending on how they work it and who they can convince. And, you know, it's almost like college now. It's an arms race around the league because you've got a hard salary cap. So there's really you can't differentiate yourself with like a luxury tax move. So now everybody's building facilities, practice facilities. It's all about facilities now, just like college football used to be before NIL, because everybody's working with the same amount of money. So that's how you can distinguish yourself. And so that's the arms race in the next couple of years. But I think that's the way they envision it, is probably Shakira and Ariel are your two quote unquote vets. Then probably 3 to 4 players that are in their first or second years, and here let's bring in a couple big dogs and see if we can be back in contention again. I think that's the idea in their heads. At least.
And obviously Aaliyah will be in year 3 by then. So we'll see how her career continues to come along. Last topic then. I'm glad you said the facilities thing, because that is a huge thing that is starting to be a big deal. It was a huge part of the Portland announcement that they're going to be building their own space, and you know, a lot of teams are doing that. The Mystics obviously are currently sharing with the Wizards. The plan is for the Wizards to get their own and the Mystics to kind of be able to take over. At least that's the last plan I heard.
Those plans keep changing.
They certainly do. The other part of it, though, is the infrastructure of the franchise. And this brings us to the other team that's here tonight in Indiana. Because I was at the two Fever Aces games last week, and I have seen Christy Sides coach in person, and I've watched them on television, and I think she deserves a lot of credit for a lot of the turnaround they've had this year. I also watch her on the sideline, and I'm like, I don't know that that's the best coach for Caitlin Clark. I don't know that Christy is helping in the Caitlin Don't Get Technicals Committee, whatever they're calling that. And so, coaching, you know, I think there's a lot of rumblings coming out of Chicago right now of is T. Spoon a WNBA legend who deserves a lot of respect for what she's done in the league, but is she the right coach for Angel Reese and that young group that they've got in Chicago? How much are organizations and GMs talking about what they're doing, not only to make sure they have great coaches that are well respected, but also maybe even flushing out coaching staffs or adding resources in ways beyond facilities to make themselves more palatable as a free agent destination as the whole league is about to reorganize, like you've described 2 years from now?
I think it's all those little things, you know, from coaches. I think you're seeing more coaches. I think you're seeing more training staff, more better training staff, having more options, like having more masseuses around, and all of the like little things of rest and recovery and that stuff. I think those are the things that people are trying to differentiate in. But I think it's absolutely a thing that you want to line up your front office / sidelines to be attractive in 2026. Everything's about being attractive in 2026. And so I think there will be a lot of teams who are look at their bench and trying to decide, hey, is this the person to lead us for the next 3 to 4 years, and who somebody will be excited to play for? Because these are the only ways that you can't differentiate with dollars. So you got to differentiate with all the other stuff. And so I think there's definitely going to be some self-scouting of the people in your organization and how you have your organization set up and who's the voice of your organization, because you want to make sure that, quite frankly, other players are going to be like, yeah, I want to play for that guy, or not have heard. That's another thing, you know, players talk. Players talk.
If they're all available, like, I don't know what, like, Clark's situation is contractually. She'd probably still have one more year on her rookie.
Yeah, she'll still be under contract.
So, like, it's not like she can be like, actually, I want out. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess she could force a trade. But, you know, you're going to want to know if you're going to play in Indiana, like, is she going to be there long term? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, if you're in let's say Becky gets an NBA job. I don't know that Becky's looking to run to the NBA, but let's say she does. Whoever gets replaced in Vegas, like, is Asia going to want to resign there based off who that person is? So you have to, you know, keep your own before even thinking about someone else. And by the way, in Indiana, they've already made some front office changes, right? Like their GM or someone, their team president, someone stepping down.
Yeah, they just tweaked
retiring.
Something. Yes.
There's already some changes around Clark, and obviously that's going to be the most fascinating situation in the league to watch because, well, Caitlin's Caitlin. You have to go talk to Caitlin.
Yep.
She has a press conference.
Eight minutes.
Yeah, seven and a half minutes. Yes. So we're going to let you go do that. We'll keep an ear to that and see if there's anything interesting that comes out of Caitlin Clark's final record. regular season pregame press conference. I saw that Katie Lou Samuelson tackled her this morning in practice. So
I looked up and I'm like, what are they doing? They're wrestling over there. And I couldn't get my phone out fast enough.
Someone did.
Oh, that was me.
Oh, you did get it eventually.
Yes, I did.
Okay. I saw a video somewhere of them practicing the de-escalation committee.
Yep, that
so,
was me.
We'll see tonight, and also I'm going to put it on you to thank Caitlin on behalf of DC for not picking up a technical in the last game, so she didn't get suspended tonight. That was pretty
funny.
She
even mentioned that.
She did post game. She was like, "Yeah, you know, you're welcome to the fans in DC." / I'm really happy that the fans that are going to DC will get to see me because she's gotten her fair share this year. She really Draymond it, got right up to the line.
Yeah,
and then. We're all good. All right. Kareem Copeland, read his work, WashingtonPost.com/sports, or when they throw that newspaper at your door. He's going to go talk to Caitlin Clark and downstairs in the press room. When we get back, I'm going to do Never Read the Comments, and boy, will that be fun.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube at the Team 980 as well. Anthony almost had a co-host. Just had a security or I don't know what she is. Some lady just like, can I talk on one of them headsets too? I was like, no, ma'am.
Yeah, I heard her in the background.
I was like, nope, you know you cannot. You can go do your job. I'm doing mine. Thank you. Thank you very much. We really appreciate your care for the show, but you're gonna keep going that way. If you'd like to participate in the show, there is a way, Anthony. You know, you could watch us on YouTube, and you could go. To the comment section, and you could leave a comment, and then perhaps I'll read it in this segment.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yeah!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
All right, you know how it works. We post up the show on YouTube at the Team 980 and at Craig Hoffman. We then put on our hazmat suits. We dive into the comments. We pick out the ones that we want to respond to, and we do it Thursdays at 5:30 live on the radio. Obviously, we're pretty much all Commanders at this point, so lots of Commanders comments to get to. And Anthony, I thought I'd start us with I'm going to call this an amuse-bouche of a comment, kind of the just a palate cleanser to remind us how much fun. Jason Dean BJ3UN says Dan Quinn needs to quit making excuses, fix the problem. Let's go to it. We brought you in here and you started talking big things, and Adam Peter started talking big things. You don't need to get your act together and let's see what happens and quit winning with 7 field goals and get some damn touchdowns. Anthony, I didn't pick this because those are all words in English that don't go particularly in that order well. I didn't pick this because, you know, he misspelled Adam Peters. I didn't pick this one because this sounds like someone who's absolutely hammered on YouTube at 3 in the morning leaving comments. I picked this because this is the first time in the channel's history / in my time doing this job that I've ever had any correspondence with a fan that included quit winning.
Sometimes you gotta laugh, Craig. You just have to laugh because, wow.
Quit winning with field goals, score some damn touchdowns. We're not gonna be able to keep winning with field goals. Quit winning with field goals. I mean, that Anthony, that is dedication to being process oriented.
Man, the amount of games won off of field goals is just, you know, mind boggling. And for us to not, you know, use those when, you know, those are opportunities to get points is even more
baffling. Touchdowns are better than field goals. Field goals are better than no points.
Yes.
Yes, they need to get better in the red zone. Quit winning. Two words that went together in a comment. And now that our palate is awoken, let's dive into comments that perhaps might incite some more intelligent discussion. Javier Ordonez, 2445, says, I understand the argument about the defense needing more time to come together, but Quinn's defense in Dallas had the same tendency to let up a lot of rushing yards. And I picked this comment out, Anthony, because it is correct. If you look at the, you know, yards per rush type of stats, or even yards per game rushing, Dan's defenses did not finish particularly well in those categories. They did much better against the pass in general, but they gave up some rushing yards. And yet, if you look at total defense, they were top 5 two of his 3 years, I believe, that he was in Dallas. They won 12 games all of those years. Obviously, what Dak and the offense does has a huge role in that, but they were able to overcome the ground game. And I think there's two points I want to make off of this that are really important and that are kind of essential parts of what this team ultimately becomes if it's going to be in the same vein as those Dallas defenses and the Seattle defenses before that in terms of success. And those points start with this. In order for this defense to be successful, they need to get turnovers. That is what the lifeblood of that Dallas defense does. Yeah, we'll give up some yards, but eventually we're going to take the ball away. And so the formula that they used on Sunday, give up some yards here, give up some yards there, but Benjamin St. Juice eventually goes, peanut punches a ball out, and we steal a possession. That's the difference in the ball game that you win by one possession. Now you can start generating 1 to 3 per game, and maybe you find eventually your own pick six monster like Deron Bland was, and your defense is scoring, and now we're cooking. That's what the Dan Quinn defense and the Joe Witt defense is about, is like, let's get going at a rate where we're creating turnovers, and we're having, even if we give up, we can give up 80 yards in a drive and get an interception in the end zone. Now, you know, might as well have been a touchback for a punt. It's just a lot of extra effort. Not as good as forcing a punt, but the result's ultimately the same. 0 points and the ball on the 20-yard line. Cool. Sick. Let's do it. But I also think the other part of that is you are more likely to die a certain and instant death giving up stuff in the pass game than you are in the run game. And this is why, if you want to be, I'm not saying that the commenter here is a dumb fan. Let's not connect those dots. But if you want to be the smartest version of yourself as a fan, it's really, really important to follow trends across the league. And right now, running the football is having a bit of a revolution in the league because of a number of reasons. Most, I would say, analysts agree that the biggest reason is teams have switched to playing a lot more too high. They're playing with lighter boxes. And as a result, teams are like, okay, if you're going to play with a lighter box, even though we want to pass the football because the EPA per play is higher, we can get a higher yards per play, all that kind of stuff on average, if you're going to give us this yardage and it's relatively risk-free because the fumbles per carry number percentage is lower than the interceptions per pass attempt. So we're limiting our risk of turnovers. We're just going to take these free yards. And so, yes, there is going to be an adjustment period for all of us as fans to be like, ugh, this feels really bad. But if you give up, let's say on a drive starter, you give up a 15-yard carry. That's obviously not ideal. Giving up an explosive run means you gave up an explosive play. You've given away a chunk of field position at the very least. But, okay, we're back at first and 10 again, 15 yards further up than where we started. Okay, you run the football again. This time it's minus two. Well, you're averaging like 7 yards a carry at that point, or 6.5 yards a carry, but which is bad, but now you're in second and 12. We can live with that. And so there's a little bit of the rushing yardage. Yes. Does it need to get better? Absolutely. But some of this is built in. And the bigger problem, this is where you're like, well, okay, well, what, they can't stop the pass. Yeah, that's the problem. The bigger problem is the Commanders' issues in coverage and not landing the plane when it comes to sacking the quarterback. Their pressure rate against Tampa was really, really good. Their finish rate was dreadful. They did not get a lot of pressure against New York because New York went just completely all out in making sure that Daniel Jones wasn't taking a ton of pressure. So they've got to figure out how to make plays in the pass game. They've got to get, you know, sacks. They've got to make sure they're more solid there, forcing higher incompletion percentages, obviously creating turnovers. But the run defense, while it can improve, is actually not the thing that I am quite as worried about as the other side of the ball. So that's why I wanted to talk about that, because you are correct that they had some of the same tendencies, yet they were one of the five best defenses in football for multiple years because they were hard to pass on. They had great sacks production in terms of Micah Parsons and DeMarcus Lawrence and what they were able to do, and they turned the football over at a higher rate than anyone else in the league. I'm sure Balzer71, B-A-L-S-E-R, Balzer71, or maybe it's, I don't know. We're just going to go with Balzer. Balzer77 says, you guys are downplaying just how bad this defense is. The Giants easily score 30 points in 22 minutes time of possession with a kicker and no punch for a fumble or drop by neighbors. Joe Witt's defense is a dumpster fire. Why do people do the what-if game?
God dang.
Why do people do the what-if game like this? Yeah, if they didn't create the turnover, they did. Oh, 22 minutes time of possession. Yeah, okay. Well, the offense controlled the football on the other side of it. And if, you know, the kicker is there, then maybe they give up fewer points in certain situations because does it affect the play calling and how aggressive they are? Like, they had to play one game. And I do think that there was a little bit of how they played some of those drives that knew that the Giants didn't have a kicker. And they were willing to give up certain yardage because they're like, getting into field goal range isn't a threat. Go ahead, come down in the red zone and then try to score because it's really hard to score down there. Or it should be. The Giants did a good job. That's not ideal. That's something they got to fix. But you played the game once. And I think Tischler did a great job talking about this on Tuesday of how the way they called the game offensively, the way they called the game defensively was influenced in real time because they were playing the game that was in front of them. And this is another example of using stats goes bad. Yes, there are stats that look bad, but stats, especially in small sample sizes, which is where we are 2 games into the season, require context. And what they are right now is not what they'll be even next week. So, there are no bonus points for having the hottest take in week two. I'd actually say there's negative points for having the hottest take in week two. So to go as far to say there's a dumpster fire, like, come on. And especially when you're playing the what-if game, get out of here with that. We don't need that nonsense. This is an interesting screen name, Anthony. We got Deontay Douglas, State Police 4246.
50505-0.
Is that his badge number?
That's what I was going to ask. Do we think the 4246 is his badge number? Can we look this up? Can we FOIA this?
Say it one more time.
We're not going to process a Freedom of Information Act request. We could. I don't even know if we have to. There might be something you can Google. Can you Google badge numbers?
I don't know.
I don't know. We're not going to go to. Anyway, I also wonder what state. Is he a Virginia State Trooper? A Maryland State Trooper? Is he watching on YouTube from, I don't know, Maine? Is he a Maine State Trooper? Deontay, tell us more about yourself. You've already told us that you're state police. Anyway, the popo's in the comments. Well, we know Deontay's not a coach because he's state police. It's clear to see what's wrong with the defensive line. The defensive line is spread too wide. Bring the line together. It's hard to play off of each other when you are that far away from your teammate. The line is spreaded so far away from each other that they are giving the runner a head of steam before anybody touches him. It's not the players. It's definitely the coaches calling a spread style defense on the line. Bring the line closer together, period. Deontay's got it all figured out, coach. I did reply, what about the edges then? And maybe Deontay's on patrol because he didn't respond, Anthony.
I think he should stick to his day job.
Anthony said it, not me. He said it, not me. It has crossed my mind at times that their alignment seems wide on the interior. However, it is also the standard alignment. Like, I'm like, wait, that looks a little wide. Oh, John's at a 3-tech, Duran's at a 1-tech. That's where they line up. I do think it's interesting watching some of the offensive line splits. Like, those that can get wider because the offensive linemen are lining up farther away or closer in certain formations or situations. I do think they do need to do a better job to pinch on some of these. Like, they're getting double teamed and they need to fight harder back against some of these double teams so that a guy like Jeremy Chinn does not have an 8-yard gap to cover. Can we make that a 4-yard gap? And he's much more likely to make the tackle. And we'll talk more about Chinn in a second. But I don't think that's going to solve all your problems, because then, okay, now what happens when they run off tackle? Like, they run outside zone, and now all of a sudden it's a really easy down block for the tackle on the edge because they're pinched together. So I hate to say it, Deontay, not a cure-all. Unfortunately, we're going to have to go back to the drawing board on that one. Speaking of Jeremy Chinn, I got a couple versions of this, Anthony. We're at Working Class Outdoors. I also have questions about this person. Working Class Outdoors, is this a working class person who likes to go camping? Or is this someone who works in the outdoors? I'm gonna guess they're a camping hobbyist.
Yeah.
And ironically, they're asking about someone named Forrest.
Great question.
I mean, that works out. Checks out. This is the right. I picked the right comment here. I didn't even do that on purpose. This is a realization I'm having in real time. Working Class Outdoors says, I see a lot of people asking why Forrest and Owens, as in Derek Forrest and Tyler Owens, aren't getting any play time on defense. What are your thoughts on that? I'm going to start by answering a question with a question. And since, Anthony, you're the only person around to answer, do you remember the last time that Derek Forrest played?
The last time he played?
He's been inactive the first two games of the season.
Played last year to start the season?
He played that, and then he played in the preseason against Miami.
Oh, yeah, that too.
You know where the defining thing in his preseason game against Miami?
Oh, was it a blown cover? No, missed tackle.
Bingo! So everyone wants the guy who was last seen missing tackles to come in and replace the guy who's missing tackles because his defensive tackles are leaving him acres of space to cover. Look, is Jeremy Chinn having an otherworldly season? Absolutely not. But there is a weird thing fans do that, you know, kind of the old phrase, it was a quarterback of everyone's favorite player is the backup quarterback because, oh, he hasn't made a mistake. And we're doing this at safety in a way that is very, very silly. Tyler Owens is an undrafted free agent. Very, very good undrafted free agent. A guy who might become a player at that position. He's very instinctual. He's very physical. But he played well in the preseason against dudes who aren't in the league anymore. Third and fourth stringers. He eventually got a couple of reps against some second stringers, and he played fine. But, like, we were out there in training camp. He also made mistakes. He's a young player, and that's what young players do. They make mistakes. Derek Forrest did not have a good spring or a good summer. He was hurt for quite a bit. He missed tackles. Some of the communication issues that have cropped up in the past were there. And I'm not telling you that if Derek Forrest went out there, he would be terrible, or that Derek Forrest is a bad football player. But the reason the guys that are playing right now is because they were better than the guys that you want to play that you haven't seen in 2 weeks and seem to have forgotten all their flaws. And I hate to be that harsh about it, but this is a very silly thing that we do every single year. And the thing is, then we remember, and fans especially remember, oh, well, we were calling for player X and he came in and he was awesome. And it happens every once in a while. And no one remembers all the times that it doesn't go well. Because I'm sure, like, I'll give you a very current example. Anthony, how many people after week one were like, play Michael Davis?
A decent amount.
How'd that go?
Very bad.
You think the guy that lost out on a start, like Emmanuel Forbes beat out and Noah Igbinoghene beat out, might be worse than those two players? Like all those training camp reps and snaps, like they maybe didn't learn something? These guys who have made careers in the NFL, 20 plus years coaching on the defensive side of the football, Joe Witt Jr. and Dan Quinn, you think maybe they can evaluate players a little bit? The assistant general manager from a team that's gone to two Super Bowls in the last 7 years, coming over to be the general manager here in Adam Peters, you think maybe he knows a little bit about what he's doing when they got those guys in-house and made evaluations? Asking them to perform in similar situations against similar people, and one group of players, the ones that are playing, perform better than the other ones that are not, and you're going to sit here on YouTube and ask for the other guys? That's my thoughts on it, to answer the question.
I felt the passion, Greg.
I just... That's more effective radio than banging my head on the desk.
Yes.
Here's more, Anthony. Ready for this one? Ready for another hot take in week two category of comment? As we're doing Never Read the Comments here on The Hoffman Show, you can leave yours at Craig Hoffman on YouTube. Jason Saunders, 1353. Ready for it, Anthony? Allen is trash. Never done anything. Two games, he's no threat. He's trash. Trade him for next year's second rounder and third rounder. Again, did I pick this comment for the reasons that many of you think I picked this comment? Sure didn't. It's not that he's calling a grown man who is a multiple-time Pro Bowler trash for two games worth of performance. No, it's not that. It's that he did the bit where he thinks John Allen is trash, Anthony, and yet another team is going to trade a second and third rounder for him. How's that mathematical? This guy sucks. Get him out of here. He sucks. And by the way, you better do it for a first rounder. What? Pick one, bro. If you think he's trash, then accept and trade him. He's trash. I don't care if they get a fifth rounder. Okay, that's not what I would do, but at least that's a coherent opinion. Oh, second and third rounder for a guy who's got no guaranteed money left? What are we talking about?
He's trash.
Hey, I think John Allen's probably worth a second or third rounder. Or a second and a third rounder. He's a good football player. But if he's trash, you ain't getting a second and a third for him. It's my absolute favorites. A couple of fun ones to wrap up here, Anthony, because I can't resist. And we also have a philosophical show question we need to answer. But the first one... I had to delay because I can't say this username out loud with people walking by because... it's so silly. The username is at bloodfarts, Anthony. Farts with a Z.
What?
As we're live at Capital One Arena and there are people walking by, there's only so loud I want to say that.
Blood. Can they hear me?
No. They're, yeah.
Blood so Anthony, farts?
Can, yeah. Yep. That
with
is correct.
A Z. Wow.
With a Z.
Wow. Nice.
And he's got comments on Gary. Gary in Upper Marlboro, who's become a... Oh, what's funny is I don't think Gary realizes he's a quasi-YouTube star. I don't think Gary consumes the show on YouTube. He just calls in on the radio show and has just missed the entire part where the internet has had lots of fun with him. He went viral on TikTok once. Anyway, but maybe he's listening right now because there's no one here. Bloodfart said, Gary listens to all the local shows and calls in all day. Is Gary unemployed? I don't want to imagine that he's calling in from his work cubicle, which is kind of a funny mental image. I do sometimes wonder, like, where people are calling from. I assume that most people that call into the show are calling from their cars.
Yeah.
And I just, like, especially in the world of Bluetooth in all these cars, are people either yelling into their phones or are they just, like, yelling at me in their cars? And the people next to them on the beltway are like, what's going on over there?
Yeah. Ooh.
I want.
That's a great question.
Yeah. I mean,. Look, if you're driving, don't take video of yourself. But maybe we should start asking folks, where are you calling in from? I said Upper Marlboro. No, literally, where are you right now? Last but not least, Anthony, here's our philosophical show question. Samuel Lake, 1556, says, I'm watching this at about 11 at night my time, and that whistle at the start just about killed me. And, you know, we have a whistle sound effect at the start of multiple of our segments of Not My Beat. No, Not My Beat doesn't have one, but the Pick Six has one. That's the one where I hear about this the most. And I think First and Ten might have a whistle because a lot of the production service that we use, a lot of their football sounders start with a whistle. And I have gotten multiple comments over the years, including that one from Samuel Lake. And this one from CB Lification says, Craig, and I love your content and consume it most days, but the volume of the intros or when you segue to a different topic is loud and the whistle wakes me up. And so, Anthony, and I've also, the funniest one, I don't have this one in front of me, but I got one last week that I was basically like, sorry, dude, we talk about football, there's whistle sound effects. And someone was like, if you had dogs, you would understand. Do we need to change our intros to get rid of the whistles, or do people just not need to listen to our show so damn loud?
That's actually funny as hell.
I agree. I think it's hilarious.
Bringing the dog in. But no, I don't think we need to.
I don't either.
To change anything.
I don't either.
Look, that's funny as a
when you click.
It's bad when you have dogs.
I appreciate that you can now watch. You know, the clips on YouTube, like on a smart TV. I watch a lot of YouTube on smart TVs. And thus, it's like out into the world. It's projected into your living room or your whatever. And that can be loud. How loud are y'all listening to or watching the show?
Yeah.
That's really my question. I did have one person that was like, I like to take it ahead of, or sometimes I take like a power nap. And then the segment change will wake me up. And I'm like, if you're falling asleep listening to us, that feels like an insult. So I'm definitely not changing it for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wake up, fool. All right. When we get back here on the Hoffman Show, beware of the whistles. We're doing Pick Six next.
In life, some days are good and some could be better. The same is true for recovery. Both take work. Both take adjustments. Finding your path is a key part of your journey, and then it's all about walking it every day. Embrace the good days, the not so good days, and the challenges, and acknowledge how you overcame them. Be open to every part of the journey and welcome it. It's unique, and it's all part of you. Find the path to recovery that works for you. Learn more at cdc.gov/stopoverdose.